So we got Stephen Key and Andrew Krause here. We're interviewing Annette Giacomazzi, and she has a really cool product called Cast Covers. Welcome, Annette.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, first of all, before we start diving into all this information about how to bring a product to market, tell us a little bit about your product and how you came up with it.
Cast Covers is truly a labor of love. My daughter, who was then 10 years old, broke her sixth broken bone. And she felt so down and betrayed, understandably, by her body, that I turned to my sewing machine and tried to make, I whipped up a cover for her and a sling, and then I made her another set, and the rest, you say, is history. And I noticed that there was really nothing on the market, and my background is sales and marketing, so I did a little research, and 3 years later, here we are. We have European distribution, and we're in notable orthopedic clinics across the country and children's hospitals, and we're the leader in cast covers. There are many people that have followed after me, but we seem to have created quite a following.
Well, wait a minute. Let's talk about that for just a minute. You saw an opportunity. You went after it. And now you're leading in this area. So there's people that are trying to copy you. How do you stay ahead of everybody?
That brings you to my I'm often asked if I patent my product, and in this particular case, I have not patented the product because I decided, A, it would be too expensive, B, it would be expensive to pursue somebody that would copy it, and there's always ways to get around a patent, and there would be a lot of negative energy pursuing that. And so I decided the best thing I can do is get out to market as quickly as possible and to present our product in a culture that would respond to my customers, and that my customers would respond to. And most of my large demographic are mothers, typically in their 30s, 40s. They can be older, but it's typically women who are mothers, and they're either buying for themselves or for the men in their life. So roughly 70% of my buyers are women. And so I want to make sure that my website, my communications, the colors that I choose, everything, the ease of use of my website appeals to women. And so I made sure that I, which was very unique and very different for me because my previous life, I was a high-level sales executive and I always sold to Fortune 500 CEOs, which, of course, are predominantly men. So I had to shift gears in how you sell. So that was a learning experience for myself. So to answer your question, to circle back, my goal was to be able to touch the buyers. It may not necessarily be the end users. The end users could be their mothers, could be their sons who are 4 years old, but to the buyers.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about customer services because it sounds like you've done your homework. You know who's buying it. You've set up your website. And to stay ahead of the competition, you have to have great customer service. Let's talk about that, and how do you provide that?
A customer service is a critical key component of my business model. Without customer service, we cannot expect any return business. So the cast covers business is unique in and of itself. You think that it's somebody that's going to break an arm, or maybe they're, you know, in crutches, or they had bunion surgery, so they're in a boot. So it's a temporary situation. And if you think about other like products or services out there, you know, the only one that comes to mind off the top of my head is a funeral home or a bail bonds. You know, you only need them really once, but occasionally you need them repetitively. So what we want to make sure we do is we have such a fabulous experience that they pass it on, because one out of five Americans in any given year are in a cast, a boot, a splint, a sling, a brace. And so I want them to be able to say, oh, you need to go to Cast Covers. That's castcoverswithaz.com. So customer service was a very critical component. And what we've recognized is when a customer hits that buy button, click, and they bought, it is theirs. It is no longer mine. When they have ordered Starry Night short arm product and a cast shield to help waterproof the product, it is now their product. So I'm just shepherding it through the system, so to speak. And so I make sure that they understand that this is their product. So if there's ever a problem, I'm always saying, your order, your product. And so they get a sense of ownership, and they recognize that I understand where they're coming from. Occasionally, problems happen, as every business. So what I do is, right from the get-go, I always say, you know, bottom line, we're going to take care of it, no matter what it takes. And that just always relaxes people. And then, and if I have to eat it, I have to eat it. And one of my mottos is, very, very clearly with my employees and my team, is we may lose a sale, but never, ever lose a customer. Even if there's a mistake made, for instance, in delivery, let's say the United States Postal Service lost it, that may not be my fault, but it is my responsibility, and the customer sees it as my responsibility. So I make sure that I take it. So customer service is a very critical component. And the items are not mine. They are the customer's, and we are stewards of their order. So we take that very seriously.
Wow. That was really good advice there. fantastic.
Don't you feel that? Like, when you buy a car, that is your car.
Get
your hands off my car until the keys are in your hand. That's your car.
Yeah.
I like that you said that you might lose a sale, but you're not going to lose a customer. And I also loved when you said that we're going to take care of this right from the get-go. So it puts everybody at ease.
Right from the get-go. It deflates the situation. The other thing that I always use is when a customer calls. Well, first of all, whenever a customer calls, they're never calling to say, hey, how you doing? They're calling because they just got injured and they want to cover it up. They want to waterproof it. They want to take a shower. They want to go, so they have a problem anyway. And so I immediately try to find out what their story is, get them to tell what their story is. But also, if they call, there could be a problem with the wrong size, and maybe, something happened, it's lost in the mail, whatever. And so what I want to do is address it as quickly as possible and let them know that I'm on their side. But they're not expecting any problems, and it just completely takes out any pressure in the conversation. And they work with it, and before you know it, this is what just amazes me, by the end of the conversation, most customers say, oh, that's okay, you don't have to do that. Yes, I do. And it has worked. We also include a handwritten personal note card in every single order. And that has more leverage, maybe even more than our customer service policy, but that handwritten note has really done a tremendous amount of PR for us.
Where'd you learn some of your customer service techniques, Annette?
It's got to be my dad. My dad had his own business. He was a successful distributor of toys, crafts, hobbies, and models, and he started when Target was only 6 stores and grew with Target. And he had Woolworths at the time and JCPenney. Number of other businesses. He ended up with 4 different distribution centers in the United States. And I would hear him around the dinner table talking about it. I'd go with him to the office. That was I loved doing that. My brother and sister, not as much. But so I think it was through just hanging around him and paying attention, how he always took care of the customer. My mother is a very social woman, and so she was always very gracious. And so I think between the two of them, I picked it up. And then I also very early had some successes, primarily due to the service that I was giving my clients. And so it just rallied for me.
Let's talk about marketing for just a minute.
Okay.
What are your thoughts about marketing? How are you handling marketing your idea, getting the word out? Are you using any social media? What do you do to market your product?
Well, this is a great topic because I'm from the old school, which is, direct mail pieces, trade shows, pick up the phone and call, and yet my customers are really with the new marketing methods. So luckily, I recognize that my brain will stay young forever if I learn new things. So I've learned social media and a number of different techniques. So I'm using an existing. I'm combining a blend of the old marketing traditions and the new. And so the customer engagement is pretty much done through social media, Facebook and Twitter and blogging and pictures and even emails. And then I also utilize die-cut postcards that are really crisp and sharp, gets the attention of the doctors, that goes directly to the doctors. And I understand and recognize that orthopedic surgeons, 97% are men. and they don't get this stuff typically, but their office manager is women, and that's, and 97% of their office managers are women. So I recognize, again, I'm selling to women, and so I have it crisp and clean, the postcard. It looks like an arm. It is an arm. It's a picture of an arm, and it's die-cut in the shape of an arm with one of our covers on it, and so it's eye-catching. And then we follow up with phone calls. I follow up with phone calls because I'm the sales, and follow up with phone calls and follow up mailings, and then also with emails, and get emails any chance I get to also just let them know and give them the opportunity to check out our culture, which they can witness through our social media.
Okay.
So it's really a combination. I've got trade shows. I've got a trade show next week that I'm going to and displaying and getting to know more people.
Well, let's talk about selling, because I think that's great. So you mentioned trade shows. So what trade shows are you in? Do you set up a booth? Do you walk it? How do you make those connections?
Yes. The trade show I'm going to next week is the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, and that is the big one show of the year, and it is has worldwide attendance, and there are typically around 15,000 doctors, orthopedic surgeons, that attend, another 15,000 exhibitors. I'm exhibiting, and what I do is, and I enjoy interaction, and as I mentioned earlier, most of my sales experience is with men, so I can approach men comfortably, and we have a mannequin that is wearing the product, so they feel very comfortable going up and touching them, because they wouldn't feel comfortable touching me, and so they touch the product, and they, you know, it brings them into the booth. And then I also walk around. I have two other people that help me in the booth, and we walk around with the product, whether it's a cover for a boot, so orthotic walking boot, or whether it's our crutch covers. So it just generates some attention that way as well. Sent out an email saying, come and visit us. And I intentionally got a booth next to one of the products that I distribute. He and I are right next door to each other because our market is the same. And I distribute his product, the Cast Cooler, which is another great product for orthopedic patients. So the trade show is very intensive. It's a very large, and the place drips with money because it's hip implants, knee implants. You can imagine the big, huge medical device firms that are there.
Okay.
And so we have to make sure that we're on our game all day long, 3 days.
Okay.
So that's one thing that we do at the trade show.
I guess my question is, do you write a lot of orders at the trade shows, or do you just follow up afterwards when there's interest?
It's a combination. Actually, I went 3 years ago, and we had just gotten started. I mean, I really was a neophyte. But I also, my experience is you go out and you sell something, you figure it out later. And so I had products, and when I got there, I realized I didn't even have a trade show promotion, so I whipped up something the night before the trade show, and yes, I sold a substantial amount of case goods at the trade show, which I wasn't even prepared for, but I did, and they got delivered, and everybody was happy. So yes, I do selling there. It is also, but I want the opportunity to be able to get back to the doctor if they feel that they're just not at a point to make a decision.
If you're going to reach out to, let's say, potential channel of distribution, if it's a retailer, a doctor's office, what's the first thing that you do? Do you send them a postcard, or do you call them first, or what do you do?
There's if I get the information from a customer, says, you know, this is like customer Jane Johnson, what I do is I ask for the doctor's name whenever they call in. Now, a lot of times I get my orders through the internet, and so I don't have that information available. But quite often I can talk to my customers. They call with questions. They call because they want to order over the phone. So what I do is one of the questions that I ask, besides size and color and that type of thing, is who their orthopedic surgeon is. We follow up with the orthopedic surgeon with a note card saying, your customer, a handwritten note card, your customer, Jane Johnson, ordered blah, 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 and is very happy and just thought you'd like to know. Mm. Almost always we get a phone call. And then I send another level of information, or maybe the arms die cut postcard that I mentioned earlier, or it could be a referral, or I suggest, it depends on if they call and how interested they are, then online we go together to the website, and this is typically then the office manager, and I have a medical professional section to my website, and I steer them through that. And so, and then we follow up, we give them the products that they're looking for, and or rack cards that they can display in their office, and then the customer gets a percentage off, and then the doctor's office actually gets a percentage off towards future case good purchases or American Express card gift certificate or Staples.
Okay. Let's jump over and talk about manufacturing for a minute.
All right.
Where do you manufacture?
We in the United States, proudly too. The
good for you.
I have my bulk manufacturing done in San Diego, southern San Diego, and then I have two sewists locally that sew our custom sizes and or one-off products or something like that. And so I'm helping put food on the table for quite a few people actually. But it's very important for me to manufacture in the United States. I've had a number of people try to push me overseas, and I just will not do that because of a variety of reasons, and mostly because I believe in the United States, and I think we should keep it here.
How'd you find your manufacturer here in the States?
Oh, that's great. So I went online and looked for contract sewing manufacturer, and was looking for somebody local, and because I'm near San Francisco, I thought I'd find somebody, but the garment district really has moved overseas. So there was very little, and I interviewed somebody in San Francisco, but I just, it wasn't there. So my sister happened to go online, who lives down in San Diego, and up popped a sewing contractor down there, and I interviewed her, and so that's where so my sister found her online.
Okay. When you were sent over to the person that was doing the sewing, did you have a pattern, or did you just say,
yes,
I need this, or how'd you do that?
That was a learning curve, too. Anytime you're in the world of fabrics, which a lot of products are, actually, you have to have a pattern, and you have to have it marked and graded, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And so, luckily, my contract manufacturer referred me to a marker and a grader, and basically you send them your silly little pattern and your prototype, and they actually come up with a computer-generated version of it and send it to the contract manufacturer. You have to go through a few revisions and make sure it's right, including sizing, that type of thing, and then you look at the yield, which how many you can get out of per yard or per whatever of fabric. And so you can get a better understanding of what your costs are going to be.
I got a question for you. Do you have some of your products, have they required tooling? I mean, the advantage of a sewn product is it doesn't require huge amounts of tooling, no injection mold. Have you done some products that have, and what do you see the difference?
Not in this business, but I have been involved with that. There's, you think that this would be easier, and it's not. Because if you have my product, well, let's just take our flagship product, which is our arms. And it has one seam, and in the seam is a hole for the thumb. Pretty simple. However, it's not, because you have to have it cover stitched, which is you have to identify how you're going to finish the garment. Is it going to have elastic in it or not? Do you have to have latex free or not? And there's another story of a mistake that happened. How far down is the thumb hole on a standard size? You know, you've got 5-year-olds and 50-year-olds, and they have different places where their thumbs go. So you have to do a tremendous amount of testing to see what works in terms of sizing and that type of thing. And imagine a garment which is more heavily constructed. It takes an enormous amount of time as well. And you go through a number of different revisions, and they send it to you, and you look at it, and what you think works, then you put it on somebody who actually could use your product, and it fits very differently for them. So you have to go back, and you have to get a different mark, different grade, and then you have to have the computer programming generated. And so it's a very similar process. It's just soft compared to hard injection mold. So it's a very similar process, actually. A lot of revisions, a lot of iterations, a lot of iterations, a lot. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about pricing? How did you price your product? I mean, do you take the manufacturing costs and maybe times 5 or times 4 and come up with the retail, or how did you do that?
One thing I did is you try to look for a like product, and in my case, I was kind of looking for some type of sleeve. You know, again, using the arms as our flagship product, and so I looked at really didn't find anything, but a price point that I do know is most people can't go over $19.99 for a simple product. And so what I did is I identified what the cost would be of manufacturing, and then I multiplied it by 4, and then I multiplied it by 5. And so I recognized that I was right along there, and I could actually price it lower. So that's why our flagship product is $16.99. And because you get a certain number per yardage, and you have to, you know, factor in all the costs. So the it was a combination of looking at what the market would bear. And I also went out and did research. How much would you pay for this? And this product does this. Here are its features. Here are its benefits. What would you pay for it? And never, ever suggest a price. I wanted to see if somebody would pay $3 or $30. And I wanted to make sure. And so then when they'd say, I really don't know, I'd start very high. Well, would you pay $50 for this product? No. Would you pay $40? And then I'd go down until they got to a threshold that they liked. But I would never lead that conversation unless they just were not willing to make a suggestion.
How did you run your focus groups? Did you just call friends and family, or did you do it more formal?
I have focus group background experience, and I decided I would be way too analytical and bogged down with the details if I did it through a formal process. So I just went out. I went to hospitals and to waiting rooms in the ERs. I went to a number of different hospitals and asked, what would you pay? Of course, recognizing that they were concerned and worried about their loved one that was in for ER, but this non-ambulatory cases.
How do you do the day-to-day operations? Let's talk about that. Do you have someone that takes care of your cash flow or your balance sheet or income statement? I mean, do you do all that yourself, or do you watch that closely?
I have a CPA, but I definitely do the day-to-day bookkeeping. There's no question. I'm just starting to pull more people. I'm starting to hire more people, which is giving me some more time. And this is something that I think somebody else can do. We're not at the level yet to hire somebody full-time, so it would be a contractual basis if I did. But the day-to-day operations, the customer service, here's one thing. I had a sewist, for instance, who wasn't meeting my standards for my customers, and I was getting a tremendous amount of product returned because it was defective, no other way to put it. And what I did is I did a two-month history of the products that she sewed versus how many were returned, and it was outrageously unacceptable. And so I knew that the expense of hiring somebody new would certainly overcome any barriers because of the expense I was already spitting out just because of damage control and making the customer happy. So getting the right people on board is very important, even if you have to pay a premium, because you don't have as many problems. So the day-to-day operations are getting easier and easier because I'm hiring the right people. And
How much money did it take to start your business?
We were just talking about that last week, and it's between $50,000 and $60,000.
Okay. Did you self-fund?
Over the course of 2-3 years.
Did you self-fund it yourself, or how did you get the money?
Yes.
Okay.
And some of that has paid back because of sales, of course, but there's always something new. It's trade shows, or it's investing in equipment. You know, the general business cycle.
How do you?
And now we're.
Go ahead.
Well, now we're gearing up for packaging for mass retail, so that's going to take additional.
Ooh, let's talk about that in just a minute. Tell me, first of all, do you run everything? Where do you have a big warehouse, big fancy office, or do you do everything at home?
No. I am very blessed. I work out of our home. We have a separate garage with a used to be a guest suite attached to it. It is no longer guest suite. It's the back office. My employees work there. The warehouse is there. Everything is done out of that. My office is in the house, so I go back and forth between the garage, which is now the office. Mm-hmm. We're eventually going to have to move out to space, but right now I've got free rent, and it works out just great.
So
and it's nice because it is separated from the house.
Okay. So let's talk about reaching out to some of the bigger retailers. What's your plan? What's your strategy? And how are you going to do that?
My strategy was first be able to demonstrate success online and to be able to come to them with a number of customers / doctors saying, why isn't this in the stores? And that's what I've been accumulating. And I've also been fine-tuning all my processes and making sure my, you know, everything is mm-hmm. to the standard that I want it to be. And so that's in place. And now I have packaging prototypes, and I can go to the mass retailers, and I may start on a coastal regional basis just because I could visit it and look at it more easily mm-hmm. than if it was, you know, on the East Coast, and then go from there. I've got some initial interest with some local mass retailers like Safeway and Fred Meyer are interested. And local, and to do trials and that type of thing.
Who did your packaging? Who's working on that?
I contracted with a gentleman through Web Marketing Therapy, which is an online web marketing firm, and they happened to have somebody who was superior in graphics, phenomenal, and he's guided me through the process, and he's done consumer packaging. And so he's helped me a lot. I have the vision. I know exactly what I'm looking for. And he's been able to realize it and put it into an actual something I can touch and feel and look at.
I looked at all the different designs you have. So it's really, you've gone after lifestyle, of course. Fashion. For your covers?
Steve, we lost. Can you repeat the question? You back, Steve?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, we lost you there for a sec. Let me get the net back on the line.
All right, thank
you. Just edit it out. Shouldn't be a problem.
Not a problem.
Let's see.
I don't know what happened there.
I don't know either. Yeah, Skype.
She's great.
There you go. You can just ask the question again. Let's pick it up from there.
Good sure. afternoon, Kevin.
Hey, Annette, sorry about that. We'll pick up from where we left off. No worries.
Okay. All right.
It seems that your designs are lifestyle, fashion. Have you ever thought about, you know, licensed characters like Mickey Mouse?
Yes. I have checked in with Disney as well as NFL. It would cost $100,000 for licensing, and that is was out of the realm of possibility when I first looked at it. My goal is to get into some minor league sports, and I'm already in some children's hospitals who have connections, and I think that will open the door a lot easier than having me just walk in. But absolutely, that is the key.
Okay. You know, just off topic for just a minute, we just had a wonderful person on, Craig Wolf from Celebrity Ducks, and his whole product is basically all licensed. And you might want to contact him. He's the most wonderful person.
And, really great.
Yeah, because he deals with everybody in the licensing industry, and he can talk to you about royalty rates and some of the things he did with the Disney guys. And you might find out you might be able to do it a little bit less expensive than you think.
Excellent.
But he's someone you should talk to, and he's just a wonderful – Andrew, wasn't that just an amazing interview? He was so giving with his information. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think I get the same vibe from Annette. She really believes in her product, and she likes selling a product that brings a smile or helps people, you know?
Yeah, and thank you. Now, Celebrity Ducks, is that his company?
Yeah, Andrew, would you send an email over to introduce
of course.
Annette?
Of course.
Great,
yeah.
Thank you. Well, that'd be great. That's high on my list of priorities this year.
He knows everybody. And he knows how to cut
that's
the
great.
Deals. Everything you want to know about licensing, he is your guy. He's just
awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He's fantastic. I think what our philosophy, Andrew Krause and ours, is really sharing information. And we found that there's some fantastic people that are living the dream of coming up with the product, bringing it to market, and they're willing to share their experiences. And
and if I could shorten the learning curve for anybody, I'm over it.
Well, you're going to do that. That's why you're here today.
Okay, great.
We thank you. So let's see if we can kind of bring this all together. Did you have a business plan when you started?
Yes. When I started, it was a general outline. I have since developed a business plan.
Okay, very good. Is there any tips and advice you would give anybody that came up with an idea? Boom, I got this idea. Now what do I do? Given that you're going through everything.
Take action. Number one, take action. You know, here's the thing that I have found. My idea isn't that special. Other people have thought of this idea. It's just that I acted on it, and I executed it, and I made it happen, and I kept working it. So number one, you take action. Number two, you have to recognize that you're going to make mistakes. You're going to fail at things. You're going to make mistakes. And as long as you recognize that, you can move beyond that. And then when you ask yourself, well, what am I afraid of? When you understand that there is fear, then you ask yourself, what am I afraid of? Well, I'm afraid of losing my life savings. I'm afraid of, you know, printing in the wrong color. I'm afraid. Just recognize what your fear is and then try to eliminate some of those fears. So, for instance, if the concern is getting rid of my life savings, if you're in your 20s or 30s, you've got plenty of time to make it up. If you're in your 50s, 60s, you might want to, you know, think, how can I reduce the cost? Can I bring in an investor? You know, so there's always, if you have a really good idea and you're passionate about it, there's always a way to make it happen. And, you know, maybe licensing would be the way, for instance, as a great example with your first book. Absolutely fabulous. And so your dream would still be realized. And then you have to recognize what your dream is. Do you want a company? Do you want to employ a lot of people? Do you want to manage them? Or do you want to just get your product out? What's key? And then I think the third thing that's also very important is surround yourself with people who believe in you. Do not be around people who are naysayers and highly critical, because we have enough critics in our own head. And so we want to make sure that we surround ourselves. Don't get just yes people. I mean, you want to, you know, recognize somebody who you truly value and respect their opinion. So if they say, you know, Annette, I think you're going off on this path, it's not what you want to do, you want to come back. So they respectfully critique what you're trying to accomplish. But as a general rule, you need to surround yourself with people who believe in you and your product, and then you can supplement that with books and videos and, you know, whatever works for you. So those are the three things. Number one thing, take action. I mean, okay. To become successful is to recognize every tiny step towards success and then take more of them. That's it.
You know, what a pleasure. You know,
just
great advice. And I just want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I thank you for the opportunity. I, you know, anytime you get an entrepreneur who likes to talk about their product and their story is always great. But that's probably the important thing. I always listen to my customers and their story. Their story is more important than my story. So I always listen to their story. And so you're doing that in turn. Right now you're listening to my story. So that's really important, is to listen to the story.